Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I know that some in our audience know the finer points of hockey.
The Chris Johnston Show.
We are your friends.
The biggest stories, bringing you inside the game.
What did you hear?
The Chris Johnston Show.
What is going on?
Here's Chris with your host, Julian McKenzie.
Part of the game.
CJ, it's post-trade, our first post-trade deadline episode, and I wore these sunglasses specifically for you because I thought you were going to come with that energy today. Where is your pair?
I've got that energy. What's funny is you're wearing those in Calgary.
Yes.
I am in a undisclosed island location right now, having a little post trade deadline holiday. I actually need my Shady Rays, brother.
I mean, in all fairness, Calgary is a very bright and sunny city. And the sun is actually up for the time that we're recording. There we go. I love your Shady
Loving
Rays, brother.
Loving the Shady Rays.
Loving the Shady Rays. Loving Thank them. You so much to Shady Rays for sponsoring the CJ Show podcast. How was your trade deadline? On a scale of 1 to 10, how happy are you that it's over?
As always, it's a 12 out of 10 excitement that it's over. I will say, I don't know exactly why. I've been struggling to pinpoint this in my own mind. I did not get nearly as sort of stressed out around this trade deadline. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's one reason for that necessarily. Maybe I'm just getting older, more chill. I don't know. Making peace with that, which I can't control, whatever it is. The last week though was there was a couple nights I had like 3 hours sleep. So by the time it got to Friday, I was feeling pretty sort of like just low energy, burnt out. But it went well. I thought we had a good day in studio. I mean, it's always so much fun in the studio and, you know, sitting for 8-9 hours, you know, adjacent to Bob McKenzie, hearing his stories. Like inevitably there's, you know, some down points during the day where there's not a whole lot happening yet. And he's just telling stories of trade deadlines gone by, crazy shit that happened. And then the crazy shit happened at about 2:57 Eastern time. Bob McKenzie broke that Thomas Hertl was being traded to Vegas, which was by far the most impactful move of the day, probably the most surprising move of the day. You know, you'll note that Thomas Hertl did never appear on the CJ's big board at the Athletic or on TSN's trade bait list because no one knew he was available. He had a full no move clause. He's out injured. He had said earlier this season that he was going to evaluate his future in the offseason, meaning the summer. So he just was not on the radar for a trade at all. And of course, it's the legend in semi-retirement, Bob McKenzie, getting that one just seemed kind of fitting. So I'd say all in all, it was a fun day. It was not as crazy of a period of trade for me, like personally, like I just didn't feel, I don't know. I was very zen throughout it, but that doesn't change the fact that I'm sitting here in a sunny location, 30 degree weather, thinking about hitting the pool this afternoon. And I'm pretty happy to be on this side of the trade deadline now.
We'll get you to that pool in a moment, but like, how does it feel? You obviously, your day to day is to be an insider. You work tirelessly up until the deadline. And then here comes semi-retired Bob McKenzie, no relation, just be like, all right, here's the biggest deal of the day. Like, how does it feel to kind of see that happen?
It's not I think it's awesome. Are you kidding? I mean,
yeah, it totally is.
And you know, Bob, just because he's in semi-retirement doesn't mean that all the relationships he built over a long and successful career don't still have some equity to them, right? So, mm-hmm. You know, there's a reason he's there. I mean, look at it. If Bob still wanted to be doing this full time, like he retired on his own volition, he'd still be the best in the game if he wanted to do it. I think he's, you know, I sense he's really happy doing other things, spends a lot of his winters in Florida and spending time with his grandkids and all those sorts of things. I know he watched his son Mike's the GM of the Kitchener Rangers. He's watching a lot of Rangers games on stream from Florida. So, you know, I think that Bob's happy doing what he's doing. But I mean, look, it's he's the king for a reason. what could I say, really? I mean, it's not a surprise to me. He's still so humble. Like, it's hilarious. About the last week leading into the deadline, he gets added back into the TSN group chat because he doesn't want to be in there, right? Like, he doesn't want to hear about all the minutiae that we're discussing throughout the season, whatever's going on in that moment. But he comes back in. He's always like, I don't got much to offer, guys. And, you know, I made this one call and here's what I learned. But I mean, he's still got a lot to bring to the table. And I thought it was kind of cool. It was by far the best moment of the whole thing. Like it was, we'd heard as a group kind of that there was something going down between San Jose and Vegas. We didn't know what it was. And so we were sort of focused on trying to hit our sources up that work for those teams or that have players on those teams that to maybe get to the bottom of it. And then all of a sudden Bob just like puts up his hand. And the camera comes over to us and he just like drops the bomb. It's just like the whole studio like erupted. It was awesome. And that's what I like. I think trade deadline needs those kind of deals.
Yeah.
Every now and again, like something that kind of comes right out of nowhere. Of course, it's Vegas too, right? That's sort of like the Death Star right now. It's, you know, it was once, you know, the Golden Misfits were like everyone's second favorite team. I feel like now it's, you know, people are cheering probably against the Golden Knights. They've had so much success. I got nothing but respect for the ruthless way they do business and the efficiency that they have. I mean, they're clearly one of the best operating front offices in the league. And I'm not saying that because they won a cup. I think because they find a way to make these trades, they're operating at a different level than a lot of front offices, just in creativity with their understanding of the cap rules, with the way they manage their roster and their assets. I mean, they've traded away, I think, every first round pick they've ever made other than Brendan Brisson now. The pick themselves before making it. So, I mean, they're all in to win. They're exactly what you needed for a team based in Vegas. And so, anyway, I'm all over the place. But I thought it was a fun deadline period. We didn't maybe get as many moves as you'd like, and there's still a few big names that were on the boards that didn't get moved that maybe become draft time moves or summer moves, but. All in all, I got to say, I enjoyed this trade period. Again, maybe because I was a little bit more zen throughout it. I didn't feel as burnt out as I have in years gone by.
Can I ask you about some of those guys who didn't move? I'm very intrigued about a guy like Linus Ullmark. You probably saw over the weekend that Bruins game where, you know, him and Jeremy Swayman, they do the nice little hug. And Jeremy Swayman's looking at him saying, "You stayed here." And then they hug that out. There were reports going around that Linus Ullmark was going to change addresses, maybe to a sunny destination of his own. What do you know about that situation?
Well, he's got a no trade clause, 15 or 16 teams. So basically half the league, he can control that too. And the Bruins explored moving him. I mean, they were in a funny situation at this deadline where they really did have to trade someone off their roster to make a meaningful addition. You know, that's beyond what they did. Obviously, they brought in Pat Maroon. You know, made some smaller kind of transactions, but if they were going to do something bigger, it was going to require taking something away. And in this case, it's pretty clear that Swayman is taking hold of that net, even though, you know, Ullmark won the Vezina last year. You know, but Swayman is kind of the goalie of the present and future in Boston. He's going to sign an extension at some point here in the near future. And so, you know, I think it makes sense that maybe that will get, you know, revisited in the summertime, but you know, Ullmark had an ability to control half the league. He couldn't go to that's what he negotiated when he signed as a free agent in Boston. And so, you know, it sounds as though he used that power to make sure he didn't move at this deadline. And, you know, I can't blame him for wanting to stay there. It seems like him and Swayman in particular are two, you know, a real tandem that like is in each other's corner that they, you know, we see the big hugs after each game. Like there's something to be said for that. And I don't sense there's any ill will or anything on the Bruins end. I mean, this is just business, man. And so, you know, maybe he gets moved in the off season. I think that there's a strong possibility we'll see Jacob Markstrom moved on from Calgary. I don't think we've heard the last of that conversation just yet. And I don't think that, you know, I don't think that the frustration that Markstrom brought up a week or so before the deadline just magically disappeared just because he wasn't traded. And so, you know, he's got a full no movement clause. I mean, more and more of this trade protection stuff factors in these trades, right? And it really affects what happens. But, I would think that will be one that carries over. You know, Jacob Chychrun in Ottawa is a name that, you know, I think the Senators really believed once Noah Hanifin was traded. And remember, that happened Wednesday night before the Friday deadline. So there was time before the deadline that talks would heat up on Chychrun just because he could fill a similar type of need in a roster, in a lineup for a team. But doesn't sound like there was a whole lot of action around him as it got close to that deadline. And so, you know, I don't know where that leaves him. I don't know if that's because he does have term on his deal, right? He signed through next year. But certainly I think that's another name that we'll be looking at this offseason. I mean, I really believe it's going to be an extremely busy draft and into the free agency period of movement, you know, both because some of those names I mentioned and others are out there, because the cap's going up a little bit. It just feels like we're going to see a lot of teams do make dramatic type of shifts. And, you know, I think it promises to be a pretty exciting offseason in that way, not to rush past the playoff races, the playoffs and everything that's going to happen in these next few months. But I do get the feeling that there was some groundwork laid for bigger trades that could happen in the offseason. I mean, we didn't even mention Trevor Zegras, but obviously his name was out there before the deadline. I think, you know, he got injured. So, and you know, he's young, he's under team control for a time here. He's under contract. So that wasn't a deal that Anaheim had to make at this deadline. Whereas obviously they ended up trading some players that, you know, the Lubushkins, Carrick, Henrique, you know, they had some other shorter term moves to make and prioritize, but I'm curious where that goes in the off season. So I think it's setting up to be a pretty damn exciting, you know, period if you're into the transactions and, you know, the machinations of trades are gonna come together once the trading window opens again.
Wouldn't it be fun if a lot of these machinations and the trade discussions went down at the draft, which happens to be in the host city of the team that does really well at those machinations? Las Vegas. I'm excited.
Yeah. I think that's what'll happen. I mean, because there's a lot of currency to trading a first round pick at the draft, right? I mean, yes. If you're a team that's maybe unloading a player and you get a first round pick and you get to make that pick right away, like I think that holds a lot of appeal. I mean, you go back over the years. I remember, you know, Corey Schneider went from Vancouver to New Jersey at the draft in New Jersey, and they got the seventh or eighth pick, and they picked Bo Horvat in Vancouver. But like, there's value to like being able to make that pick right away and add a player into your organization. Obviously, it's a time when first of all you're allowed to exceed the salary cap at that point by 10%. And you obviously have players that are on expiring deals that, you know, are not going to be coming back. And so it's just, there's more fluidity in the system. And, you know, we've had kind of a static league in my mind. Like a lot of the really good teams have been really good for a while. A lot of the really bad teams have been really bad for a while. I just think that there's a shakeup that's got to happen. I mean, we've spent a lot of time in the last week or two, you and I discussing Pittsburgh. I mean, Pittsburgh's going to have to be active in that window. I mean, I just feel like a lot's coming together or will come together. And we got to see how the playoffs shake out, right? I mean, a team that loses in the first round or one that goes on an unexpected run can change the path, you know, positively or negatively of how management acts. And you know, I think of the Maple Leafs in Toronto where I live. I mean, how the playoffs goes will probably have a huge bearing over what kind of moves Brad Treliving's looking to make in the offseason. If they happen to have a long run and everything goes well, I mean, we're probably talking about, oh, how do they tinker around the edges to take another run at next year? Whereas if it's a first round exit and, you know, maybe there's a little different discussion around the team. So we got to let the drama play out here a little bit more, I think, before we can know for sure what's going to happen. But my sense is that there was a lot more discussed at this deadline than actually happened. And enough actually happened too, that, you know, it's going to be a fun summer, brother.
Do you have a trade deadline winner and a loser?
I'm going to say Carolina's my winner. And I say that knowing full well that the moves they made, you know, getting Jake Ensel, taking a gamble on Evgeny Kuznetsov, like they might not pay off. This could be a team that I mean, at least with Kuznetsov, he is signed through next year. So if it doesn't work immediately, there's still time to get it on the tracks. So maybe Ensel doesn't fit in. He's coming back from injury. You know, they could still lose. And I'd still call them a winner because I do feel that organization, I mean, it's funny. It cuts both ways. They're operated in a really smart way, very patient way, and it's allowed them to build a team that's really been one of the better teams in the last number of years. But they've fallen in a predictable and repeatable fashion where they don't get enough scoring come the playoff time. And, you know, last year they got all the way to the Eastern Conference final. So it's not like they haven't had success. Don't get me wrong. But I feel like given that they're operating this window where they have a chance to win it all, like to see them be aggressive in the manner that they were, and honestly, they didn't give up all that much in the Jake Ensel deal. I'm not a prospect expert, but they feel they didn't give up any of their top five prospects. They didn't give up a first round pick unless they win or go to the Stanley Cup final, in which case they gave up a 31 or 32 pick. You know, they didn't mortgage too much of the future to make those moves. And I think that they're high upside moves for them. So I have them as my winner. I mean, you could say Vegas. I'm probably crazy not to say Vegas, but, you know, I just
Jake
think
Gensel movie is really good. You're not crazy for that at all.
Well, it's just that they don't normally do it. I think that they're a winner because they act like they did something that I think would excite their locker room, excite their fan base, legitimately gives them more, you know, if Kuznetsov is even, we don't expect him to be his 2019 playoff beast mode self, where he led the whole playoffs in scoring and finished second in the Conn Smythe trophy voting behind Alex Ovechkin. Like, he doesn't have to be that good. I mean, obviously it'd be nice if you're Carolina, but even if he's, you know, a 60 point player, like plays at that kind of level, which I think should be within his grasp. Let's hope, you know, he's dealt with some things in his personal life. I saw he was, you know, gave a nice interview talking, you know, about some of his personal struggles and offering a word of encouragement to those that are going through similar problems. You know, let's hope he's managed himself through that, because obviously he's been in the player assistance program. You know, if he can play at that level, like, he gives them a second line center that better than what they had. And, you know, Gensel's a top line winger for that team once he's back and healthy and fully up to speed. They just brought Freddie Anderson back in after he dealt with blood clotting issue that kept him out for months. I mean, you could just see a lot come together for Carolina, where I'm comfortable calling them a winner. Loser's hard. I mean,
yeah.
Who's a loser? I mean, does a loser have to be a team that does nothing?
I mean, because if you feel that they probably should have been doing something instead of doing nothing, that could work.
The hard part for me is Florida didn't do anything at last year's deadline, and they went to the Cup final. Like, sometimes the moves you don't make you a winner in a strange roundabout way.
Could be a team that made moves and didn't make moves well enough. I know some people are shaking their head at San Jose's end of the deal, the Thomas Hertl move. I guess because of the way the salary was retained. That's not me necessarily calling them a loser. I'm just bringing them up as a potential example, I guess.
I mean, the problem with San Jose is they're sitting at the blackjack table and they got 17, and you're just not going to win many blackjack hands with 17. I'm not defending Mike Grier at all necessarily, but like, he took over a team with a lot of huge contracts, with players with trade protection, and they were no good anymore as a team. I don't mean all those individual players didn't have something to offer. Mm-hmm. And really, he's got to find a way to move out all those contracts. It's not easy to do. You know, he's now holding two of his three retention spots are spoken for years now, because he retained money on Erik Karlsson and he retained money on Thomas Hertl. Mm-hmm. And he's still got some big salaries. I mean, he's getting the numbers decreasing and decreasing. We'll see what happens with Logan Couture, who unfortunately basically has been injured all season long. I just think San Jose is in a tough spot. I think that you're winning if you're the win is that you're moving some players out and you got to build up. But like I saw that they have 7,000 at a game last week.
Yeah, I saw the attendance was very low for San Jose. I mean, they've been bad all year and fans have checked out.
But when are they going to be good again? Like, they are nowhere close to being good again.
It's going to be a long time before that happens.
And if they win the draft lottery and get like Macklin Celebrini, which would be a cool story, right? His dad works for the Golden State Warriors. I think he played hockey in that area. And you know, even though he's a Vancouver kid by birth, you know, has spent time around there because of his dad's profession. I mean, that'd be a cool story and all that. Don't get me wrong, but like, you need they need like six players, not just one really good player. You know what I mean? So sure, I guess the Sharks, I don't like the winners and losers thing, if I'm being honest.
You don't have to do that.
But I'm also not worried about offending someone. I just don't have like a hot take for you. Like, I'm
chilled
trying to
CJ.
Think like.
Chilled CJ, no hot takes. Big surprise.
Oh. As cold as the beer I'm going to be drinking poolside in a couple hours, bud.
Tell you what, ice in the veins.
You know, I just think of like a team like the Rangers wanted to do more, I think, than they managed to get done. But like, does that make them a loser? I don't know. There's still one of the top teams in the league.
Yeah.
I'm not handing out a loser badge today.
That's okay. That's fine. That's okay. No one has to be a loser. Trying to think of anything. I mean, any other trade stuff you want to get?
It's like,
you go ahead.
It's, I was just thinking, like, the only winners, the winner has to be someone who did something, but like, those trades might look terrible in 3 months for any team, right? Like, any team that loaded up big, like, maybe they just like get swept in the first round. You're like, what did you trade all that stuff for? Like, are you idiots? This is it's so easy to be in the second guessing game, which is where we are, right? Like, we're the professional second guessers because we don't have to make any of the decisions in the vacuum. But then again, one team's going to be in the Cup final and it's going to be media day, the Cup final. and we're going to be writing like this trade, like this guy, like what a brilliant move. Like he's changed everything for this team. I mean, that's how the narratives go.
I'll be sure to read your story on it. Were people in your market in Toronto happy with Brad Treliving's trade deadline?
I mean, people are never happy. I don't think so. I saw lots of people saying, why did you give up? You know, they gave up 5 or 6 picks, all sort of third, fourth, fifth, sixth round kind of picks. Like nothing, they didn't give up any premium assets, I would call it, to bring in, you know, they didn't bring in premium players, right? They brought in role players. And so I saw people second guessing, why didn't you just package all those picks together and get one good player instead of 3 sort of marginal players? You know, but I get the thinking there. I'll say that, you know, the Leafs, they've actually won a lot of games. Like for all the negativity, and they lost 2 to Boston in the last week, right? Which just gets a certain, like that bothers people. And I get it because there's a history there and they're likely to play the Bruins in the first round. Like I'm not dismissing that as nothing, but they've won like every other game they've played for the last 3 weeks, other than those games against Boston and one against Vegas, I believe. So I don't know their exact record, Julian, but there's something like 12-3 in their last 15, roughly. Mm-hmm. The underlying metrics are vastly improved for the team. One area they have continued to struggle in is the penalty kill. And I think it's logical to look at a playoff series and realize that's an X factor kind of thing. If you don't have success when you take penalties, I mean, that could be the difference between winning and losing a series. And they've brought in 3 players that they can use on the penalty kill in Ilya Lyubushkin, Joel Edmondson, and Connor Dewar. And so I get that those on the surface, none of those players probably excite you too much. It certainly gives them a rougher element on the back end. I think that opponents are going to feel it a little bit more when they go towards the Leafs crease in the games that matter. Joel Edmondson in particular is 6'5", not afraid to put his lumber back across the back of someone trying to get towards his net. We've seen it for a long time in this league. He's had success. He's played on a team that won a Stanley Cup, mm-hmm. and another went to the Stanley Cup final in Montreal. So, you know, I don't know where his health's at and how effective he's going to be, but I can at least understand the thinking. And the Leafs ultimately, do you know what they chose? They chose not to trade their first rounder. They chose not to trade, you know, one of their top prospects, whether that's Easton Cowan, who's on like a 30 game point scoring streak in the OHL right now for London, or really? Fraser Minton, who started the season with the Leafs and is now in the WHL. And they elected to go for role players and to tinker around the margins. And, you know, I understand the thinking. There wasn't that many good players available. Like at the end of the day, and it seems as though, you know, I think Chris Tanev was the one guy they really wanted that they didn't get. But there's a lot of reasons for that, whether it's, you know, probably the Flames not wanting to necessarily deal with Toronto unless there was a premium paid, and the Leafs elected not to pay that premium. And, you know, Dallas swooped in there and got him. But other than that, I just didn't see a lot of players that I think the Leafs were super high on. And so, you know, I understand it. Look, as long as they have this team, with these 4 players making what they make, and it's only one more year that, by the way, after this season, John Tavares has 1 year remaining on his deal at an $11 million cap hit. But if you have that much money tied up in a team, I hate to seem like a broken record, you're either going to win or lose because of the performance of those players. That might sound almost like unfair because it is such a team game, but they account for more than half of the salary cap. So there's only so much you can ever do in the other positions on the roster. And so I think it's as simple as, you know, I like what the Leafs have done here of late. Honestly, myself, I know it's required, say, a Tavares to maybe have to, you know, put some of his ego aside, like the natural ego he would have as being an elite athlete. I'm not saying he's a really nice man. He's not ego-driven, but, you know, he's playing on the third line. But they've spread their talent across 3 forward lines, and I think it's worked. I think it's maximized the group they have. And so if they can do that in the playoffs and get enough scoring and win some multiple rounds, everyone will look back on the trade deadline and say, hey, this made some sense, because the blue line is probably their biggest weakness. But they didn't become a Stanley Cup favorite with the trade deadline. No. You know, I think they're still in the same kind of position that they were in when we entered the trading period.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
This episode of The Chris Johnston Show is brought to you by Babbel. What if in 2024 you got a little bit better every day? When you're learning a new language with Babbel, that's exactly what you're doing. And if Babbel can help you start speaking a new language in just 3 weeks, imagine what you can do in a full year. Be a better you in 2024 with Babbel, the science-backed language learning app that actually works. You don't have to pay hundreds of dollars for tutors or waste hours on apps. They don't really help you speak the language. Babbel has a quick 10-minute sets of lessons, and they're handcrafted by over 200 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. And Babbel is designed by real people for real conversations. Their tips and tools are approachable, accessible, and rooted in real-life situations and delivered with conversation-based teaching so you're ready to practice what you've learned in the real world. I know I've tried learning German and Spanish, and Babbel's been extremely helpful with that. Babbel has over 16 million subscriptions sold, plus all of Babbel's 14 award-winning language courses are backed by their 20-day money-back guarantee. Here, for a limited time, for our listeners, right now, get 55% off of your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners at babbel.com/Johnston. That's 55% off at babbel.com/Johnston. babbel.com/Johnston. Rules and restrictions may apply. I have one last trade question to ask you, unless you have any other machinations you want to bring up. This is the time to do it. Just unload the clip on trades. But I do have one question. I want to ask you about New Jersey Devils GM Tom Fitzgerald and his media avail after the deadline was over and how he still wants to go big game goalie hunting in the offseason. But there's one quote I'm really intrigued about. Mm-hmm. There is a market. People performing have set that market. He's talking about the goaltending market. All I'm trying to do is be fair in that market. But you also need a team that wants to make fair deals too versus just extorting you for every big asset you have. This feels like one of those, like, if the shoe fits quotes, because I saw people in Calgary take exception to this. There are people in Nashville who are taking exception to this. I wonder if people in Boston were wondering about this because of the whole Linus Ullmark thing. Basically, if you have a goaltender and we know that Tom Fitzgerald was calling everyone about goaltenders, you have every right to feel some way about this quote. Who do you think he was targeting with this one?
Well, I think all of the above, honestly. Like, I don't think that's aimed at one team. I think if you look historically, goaltenders just do not generally bring that much back in trades. Even really good established goaltenders, when they trade places, basically the limit over time is around a first round pick. You rarely see anything better than that over time for any goaltender that's been traded in the cap era. And so that was the market in Tom Fitzgerald's mind. But when he was trying to trade for franchise type goalies, right? I mean, if he got a UC Saros out of Nashville, that is a franchise type goaltender. You know, someone who's been nominated multiple times for the Vezina Trophy, consistently a workhorse who plays a lot of games and performs above his peers. Jacob Markstrom, same type of thing. I know last year was a down season for the Flames. He's right back to being the guy he was. He's a former Vezina type candidate. I think even at one point in time, the Devils were looking at John Gibson earlier in the season. Like, they were looking for an established sort of top of the order goaltender. And obviously they found the prices to be too much. I mean, everyone's trying to get one of his best young players, like a Dawson Mercer, out of him, plus first round picks. Right. And that just wasn't going to work for New Jersey in this period. And I think that while it was sort of a funny, it's not what you would have expected out of them at the deadline. I actually think they've set themselves up well to go big game hunting this summer, because you get Jake Allen at half the money retained by Montreal and he signs through next year. So he's under a $2 million player. Pretty good as your 1B option. And you know, again, consistent veteran in the league, played a lot of games, won a lot of games. Now you've left yourself that number one spot, the 1A spot. And I really believe that they're going to take another hard run at Markstrom. I think Markstrom wants to play in New Jersey. Certainly had his mind open to it during this period where he thought at one point he was being traded to the Devils. So I think that's the most likely option. But if maybe Calgary says, we're not trading you in the offseason, then you go down the list. And, you know, I think Saros is another name that we should be watching as we get into this period, because, you know, Yaroslav Askarov has lit the American Hockey League on fire with Milwaukee. You know, he's played a couple games in the big show with the Predators, but I think I think they have to really look at clearing the way for him. That being said, you want to be careful because, you know, sometimes there's a learning curve for a young goalie. So that's kind of what Barry Trotz is balancing. But I could see Saros moved in the offseason. So I don't think Fitzgerald was aiming that quote. I think he was aiming that quote at the marketplace in general. I don't think it was aimed at one of his colleagues, just one specific GM. So, yeah, you know, rant away in Calgary or Boston or Nashville or wherever you are if you feel like he was sub-tweeting your GM with that quote.
Oh, we definitely will. Anyway, all right. I've tapped into your brain enough with regards to trades, unless you have anything else. This is the last possible moment that we'll do that beyond whatever gets
asked. Are we doing an Ask CJ? There's got to be trade-related questions in there, no?
There might be. I mean, look, you might be chill. If you are up for those trade-related questions, I can provide more. I will obviously provide fun ones for you because I know you want to be fun.
That's good. When I'm wearing my Shady Rays, I can bring whatever heat you bring my way because these things protect all my face. Sorry.
Producer Nick, I hope you're taking all of these Shady Rays mentions and cutting them up into an ad because that literally is like, we're not going to get any better than what we're going to do. Me just doing a read is just basic, but like us actually talking about the product, I don't see why not.
Love it.
Yourself
I ordered
Rays,
two
people.
Pairs, by the way.
Man, I'm debating getting a second one myself. Anyway, one of the two stories I want to get to from this past weekend. John Tortorella suspended 2 games and fined $50,000. That's a lot of money. After being ejected against the Tampa Bay Lightning, after arguing a call for unprofessional conduct towards referees, up to now, and you could tell me if you would be in the know. I still don't know why he got suspended. I still don't know what happened. I still don't know if he said anything or if he just picked on the referee's bad side that day and just said, you know what, you're done. I mean, obviously the standoff plays a big role into it, but the fact that it got to that point is just something's missing with this story, and I'm not sure what it is.
Well, obviously he said something the referee didn't like, and I don't know what he said.
But what?
I think it's – well, but it's important. It's an important piece of context we're missing, right? But obviously – he wasn't happy. You know, you saw him say he didn't want to leave the bench. You could tell that when the interaction was caught on camera afterwards. And, you know, the truth is right now, the referees have a ton of power, Julian, because all the head coaches were warned before the season that, you know, from Gary Bettman himself, they called all the head coaches. They all had to fly to Chicago for a GM's meeting. And I can tell you the impression from the coaches that they were there just to be lectured a little bit. It was like being called into the principal's office and told, you know, they were showing a video with, I think, 20 or so clips of them yelling and like losing their minds and, you know, basically said, this is a bad look for the league and we're going to, you know, we want rid of this. And then now if the referee throws someone out of the game, which they seem to be doing with more regularity, that coach is getting nailed with a fine. It happened to Greg Cronin in Pittsburgh early in the season, late October. He got fined $25,000. Jay Woodcroft got tossed out of a game in Vancouver like a week after that. He would have been fined, but he ended up being fired by Edmonton within a couple of days, and so he didn't ultimately get fined. We saw Sheldon Keefe recently kicked out of a game in Toronto for arguing, really not, again, I wasn't down at ice level. I talked to someone who was at ice level or really close to that, said that like it wasn't crazy, like he wasn't like swearing as much as you would expect. He wasn't losing his mind. He gets tossed out of the game. It's the referees, you know, basically call it, he gets fined. Don Granato in Buffalo argues a non-call or a penalty call. It was a penalty call against Zach Benson. And he gets fined. And now Tortorella, I mean, at some point, I just wonder, we're missing, I feel like the referees aren't held to the same account as the coaches in this.
They're not.
Either, right? Because usually, in all seriousness, in all those cases, usually the coaches are arguing the right thing. Like, they're not, it's a missed call on the ice or maybe a series of missed calls. And it doesn't seem like coaches are losing their minds. Like, I think the message got through to the same degree, but there's still, if the referee doesn't like what he hears off the bench, the coach is gone and he's getting hit with that fine. Like, I think it's going to come to a head. Like, I can't imagine the coaches are just going to accept these fines, if you know what I'm saying. And you know, I thought it was interesting in Philadelphia that the team CEO came out and said that the Flyers are going to pay the fine. Yep. And so, like, they're backing their coach because the coach is in a tough spot there, right? And I get that, like, it's easy to sort of hate on coaches in a sense. Like who's got the coaches back, really? Like, everyone's, like, when you're a fan of a team, you're usually second-guessing the coach, you know, the decisions that are made, this or that. But the coach is on the bench, and the game's going away that he doesn't like it for his team, right? His GM's up in the press box, like, watching what the coach is doing. Like, are you arguing for us? The players are sitting there. They want to feel like the coach has their back. That, you know, even the media, like, we're going to ask the coach, like, why didn't you know? Like, I feel like the coach is almost in a no-win situation sometimes. They're being pulled between these different poles. And obviously, I think that, you know, John Tortorella was sending a message for his team. Like, that's kind of what the CEO of the Flyers said. Like, we got his back. He's out there defending our team in that situation. And I don't know where this goes next. I'll say that. I mean, it's interesting circumstance. And, you know, for him to sit out two games, I don't know if there's an appeal process, but I would suspect, because I don't remember a coach being suspended games. Do you?
So two games is interesting. Sean McIndoe brought up on Twitter, I don't know if you remember Robbie Fatorik when he was in New Jersey.
Oh, yeah.
And he had that outburst where he took part of the bench and he threw it onto the ice. Apparently he only, and I get different eras, but he got suspended one game. This man argued a call and threw a part of a bench onto the ice and got suspended less than John Tortorella yelling at the officials and deciding he wasn't going to leave the bench.
Yeah.
That's kind of weird.
It is weird, but the league was going to say, like, the response from the league on that would be what you said yourself. But different era, we're applying different standards. This is, you know, it's what they do now when they're giving certain, you know, supplemental discipline that's more than was in the past. They say that the standards changed. But yeah, anyway, I don't have much more to unload on Torts. I just think we have not heard the last of this kind of conversation because, you know, that's now five coaches by my count that have been, you know, punished this year. And we haven't really seen that bad of behavior. Like, that's, like, relative to the past, it hasn't really been that crazy. So I don't know. I don't know where it goes next. I mean, you can't tell me it's an emotional sport, first of all, but also the coach is supposed to have the team's back. And I think that if anything, we look at the refereeing and wonder about the standard of refereeing in this league. I think that might deserve a little more scrutiny than what the coaches are saying about the refereeing.
You said it, not me, because that's exactly how I feel. Anyway, we have definitely not heard the last when it comes to John Tortorella. Did you catch any of the Nashville-Minnesota game over the weekend? Specifically the ending. John Hines, I can't believe he did this, pulling his goalie from Minnesota in overtime. 4-on-3 situation. If Minnesota were to get scored on in that moment, they would lose the extra point that is normally allotted to that team in overtime. Instead, they win the game. They get the full 2 points. One of the most gutsy calls we've seen this year. I still can't believe that happened. What did you think of that moment?
What's amazing is that he did it with 6 weeks left in the season, right? And obviously, it's just a reflection of where Minnesota is in the standings. They're down two touchdowns in the fourth quarter right now, and they're trying to Hail Mary a comeback. And look, if it happens, we'll probably look back on this moment and say this is where it started for the Wild, that they got it back. Because, you know, it has happened at least once in the past where someone has done it, but it's usually on, like, the last day of the season where you really need the 2 points. And if you lose the one, you know, by pulling your goalie, it doesn't matter. The fact that they did it this far out and it worked, I mean, good for John Hines. I mean, we're seeing coaches, I think, play the percentages more. It's almost like in the NFL, Julian, like, how way more teams are going for it on fourth down because the numbers show that's better. You know, you're seeing way early goalie pulls. You know, Patrick Waugh still pulling goalies with like 8 minutes left of the game and stuff like that. And this is kind of an extension of that. I'm sure the Wild, I mean, I'm willing to bet that wasn't just a gut feel call. I bet that they had some numbers to back up the decision there. And look, when you're 4-on-3, that's a lot of ice. Like, I always feel like a 4-on-3 power play is more dangerous than a 5-on-4. Now, it wasn't a power play in this case because someone had to be thinking about the net at the other end.
Of course.
But good on them. I think it's compelling. I think it's interesting. And I wonder if Minnesota finds itself in overtime again, if it's going to continue. Like, is this now standard operating procedure, or was that a one-off game where they felt like the team they were playing made it worth it and all that sort of stuff, because Nashville would be one of the teams, obviously, Minnesota's trying to chase down. To be continued, but pretty compelling, interesting call by Hines.
I believe the last time this happened, I'm going off of the NHL public relations account. They tweeted this. The last time that as that situation has happened, Los Angeles over Boston on October 28th, 2017. If memory serves, that's probably the game where Tyler Toffoli scored that goal in OT and won it like off the faceoff with like how many seconds left. So that's probably that, like, because there was not a lot of time. There was literally enough time for them to win the faceoff and then shoot, which probably makes sense why you want an extra skater on the ice. At that point, Boston doesn't have enough time.
They didn't have time. They didn't have time to send it down and score on your empty net.
Exactly. I believe it's probably that game.
Huh. Yeah. There you go. Well, that was an October game. But yeah, I think that there was another one at the end of the season one year where someone did it. But again, you just did it at that point because you had nothing to lose in a sense. Exactly. I mean, your season was on the brink. But in this case, like losing that extra point with 6 weeks left, like John Hines opened himself to a lot of second guessing there if that didn't work, but it worked. So here we go. We're giving him his flowers.
All right. It is time for Ask CJ. We have gone through the bulk of our show and it's a Monday. So it's time for us to go through questions that you sent in, whether through Twitter, whether through
Discord. I got to correct you, man. It's Friday where I am.
All right, we get
it. This don't feel like a Monday, bud.
It's just, you're going to be in this undisclosed location on a Friday for the next how many days? All right, cool. All right.
I'm on island time, brother. It's Friday.
Island time, brother. Okay. Let's leave it let's leave it at island time before you tried to start talking like you're from the islands. McLernan on Twitter. How many beers did CJ have after the deadline passed? Are you at liberty to say?
One. I had one.
You had one cerveza.
I came home, ordered in some dinner, and had exactly one beer. Because A, I was dead, but B, I had to get up early and fly to this island where I will have more than one beer. But I had a very tame Friday night. I was just beat. So it tasted damn good, though. One of the best beers, maybe the best beer I've had in 2024, the first beer after the deadline.
Tell us the brand. Tell us. I mean, I guess they were giving them free promo.
Collective Arts.
Tell us.
Collective Arts, man. I really like their beers. They're out of Hamilton. Good craft beers. And it was called, it's a high test beer, to be fair. I think it was called Fuzz Face. I think it's about 8% alcohol, but it's a tasty beer. I wouldn't
like
recommend having multiples of those because you might really get some fuzz face going on, but if you're going to have one, it's a good one.
I know CJ's a big fan of Collective Arts. I believe the first time we ever met, we hung out at a Collective Arts. I believe it was.
Yeah. We went to the brew pub or whatever they had there.
Yes. Yep. I would love to go back. You were right. There is a trade question in here. On Friday, rumors circulated that the Los Angeles Kings were shopping Pierre-Luc Dubois. Can you confirm or deny this? If true, what was the ask? This is from Lori Bennett.
I don't think they were shopping. This is where we get into semantics. I think that there were very few centers available to any team looking to acquire a center. Pierre-Luc Dubois plays center. I don't think it's a secret to say it hasn't gone well in the early days in LA for him. And I think that they were at least just gauging what might be out there. And I don't believe anything got that close. I think that's the extent of it. Shopping is different, right? Shopping is where you're like, we are desperate to get rid of this guy. But when we talk about trades that didn't happen that are worth revisiting in the summer, let's see where everyone is there in the summer. And, you know, Dubois has trade protection, right? I believe in his contract. So like he would have to be on board with this. And maybe, who knows? They've already made a coaching change there. We'll see where the Kings are at. Maybe there's a way to patch this up still. But, you know, I think that they were gauging the market, you know, much like, to be fair, you know, with Elias Lindholm in Vancouver, I think it's the similar thing, like where obviously they didn't decide they had to trade this guy they just got. They were seeing what it would look like. They were having exploratory conversations that didn't ultimately materialize in a trade.
Okay. From Lacey Gracie, what meals did you pick this year? Obviously referencing you being on the TSN panel, and every year you get to at least pick off what lunch option you get.
Oh yeah, and breakfast. I got the breakfast sandwich with home fries. I didn't really eat the home fries though. And then I had the buffalo chicken wrap and salad at lunch. And it was actually very tasty. And I got the bubbly. You could choose your drinks. I got a bubbly and I got a Kit Kat bar for my snack.
Kit Kat.
So I did not go healthy.
Kit Kat.
I did not go healthy.
It's okay. That sounds like you ate really well.
Basically, you got to choose like four things, and I chose like the least healthy option of each of the four boxes, or pretty close to it anyway.
I mean, and it's funny because
Dreger was sitting beside me, and he got like a big salad for his lunch. I was like, "Oh man, just salad shaming me over here! Like, what is this?" But he was full of regret. I think he knew it was a bum order. It was like a bad choice.
Oh man, Dreger. Also, the fact that you mentioned Kit Kat and we didn't fight over a chocolate bar, that doesn't happen a lot on this show. Kit Kats are good.
It's true. And do you know what? It was a roll of the dice because, like, when you were picking it on the list, I just picked chocolate bar, and I didn't know what chocolate bar I was getting. It turned out to be a Kit Kat, which I like, but I just chose the chocolate option for my snack. Like, there was, like, apple or whatever, and CJ's just like, no, chocolate.
So chocolate. Could you imagine if they had given you an Aero bar instead of a Kit Kat? You would have been in heaven.
And, like, we're not doing this. We're not fighting.
All right, that's cool.
This is a time of peace and love here in the islands, man.
I was all I was just doing was just propping you up on the chocolate that you like, man. That's all I was trying to do. Did Bob McKenzie bring any of his Bobby Marks?
No, but he did in previous times. Like, I actually remember once drinking one on a set.
Yes.
Like, after the show, sorry. To be clear, not live on TV, but like after we were all done. But no, he didn't bring it this time.
Yeah, I guess he was out.
I like the Bobby Marks too. Like, I've actually purchased those before.
Yeah,
I don't just drink the free product. I've actually put my money where my tastes are.
Yeah, I've supported the family business before. Yeah, I bought some at LCBO. Yeah, shout out to you, Bob McKenzie. From John R. What is CJ Shade's unique nickname favorite thing to do to mellow out after a long day, and what does he do to mellow out on a long weekend? Fly to an island.
Yeah, come to an island, sit by the pool, afternoon cerveza, and that's the good stuff right there. I mean, I've usually tried to go away after trade deadline, like for a couple days. I did it last year too. I just find it's like something good to look forward to, and kind of just like decompress, you know, like get your mind up. You know, when I'm here, I'm not looking at my phone too much. Mm. You know. I'm not watching hockey games for the next 4 days. Sorry to break it to you, but there's like literally, although last night of all places, like I'm in a really random island and there was a hockey game on in a bar across the street from where I was eating dinner, which I was, the Hurricanes game was on. I was stunned to see that. But so maybe I could find a hockey game if I wanted to, but I'm not looking. I met a family from Tampa in the pool yesterday.
Oh, cool.
And they were talking some Lightning with me. That's about as close as I've gotten to working since I've been here.
Did they know who you were?
No, we just got chatting and, you know, where are you from? Oh, you know, you must like hockey. I'm like, yeah, I'm actually a hockey reporter.
Okay. Yeah.
I've been to Tampa a lot over the years, you know, that kind of thing. It was, they were more college football fans. They're actually worried, but they want to find a college basketball game on while they're down here somewhere. So
anyway,
I digress. What do I do to chill out? Probably what everyone does. Like, watch some Netflix. You know, I like to go. I love it. Honestly, this will sound weird, but, you know, the 100%ers will know I'm a big runner. I love when I have a non-busy day and I can, like, have, like, a long run and just, you know, just sort of, like, not be stressed by time or work, not be distracted by what's in my brain, just, like, go for a big run and then eat a big meal. I don't know. I'm pretty boring, man. I'm not doing anything that exciting, but, you know.
That's okay. Good to,
you know, and then a chilled long weekend, like, go see family.
You're
human. Sleep in.
That's a great way to spend a weekend. That's awesome.
Do you know what's funny? So I have one of these watches that measures like how long I sleep.
Yeah.
The Saturday night. So Friday was a short night because I woke up and flew after the deadline. But Saturday night, I slept 11 hours and 40 minutes, which I'm pretty sure is the longest recorded time I've ever had on my watch. Like no alarm.
Oh,
blackout man. Shades here in the hotel room, slept for 11 hours and 40 minutes. It was glorious.
The first sleep you get after you fly away somewhere on vacation, it's always the best sleep. It's fact. We literally have proof of this. It's fact. That first sleep.
The only downside is it was then like mid-morning, obviously, when I woke up. And because I'm in a hot location, it made for a hot run that morning. That was the only downside to it, but it was still worth it. But I was I was a sweaty mess yesterday morning.
Two more questions for you, Siege. From KK Town 2272, thoughts on the Blue Jays offseason moves? You're about to rip out of your shirt with that one.
I know, and I want to be all chill, man.
I'm sorry.
I don't believe in this team. I'm pumped they got Joey Votto.
Yeah, that's
good. Because I think Joey Votto is just like one of the most interesting, cool characters in all of sports. And it would be quite a story if he could, you know, have something of a useful season. Like, I don't know how much he's going to play for the Jays. They obviously don't have a positional need for him. I assume he's just going to be sharing the DH duties and playing spot. But, I mean, it would be interesting if he could get back. But they didn't address their weaknesses. They're just assuming everyone who had a shitty year last year is going to have a good year this year, which I just don't think is the way to do it. Like, they still have the same ineffective management group. Like, they're a good team. I just think that they didn't make moves to be a great team. And so they frustrate me. Okay. Where am I at with them? I got tickets to opening day and I'm not even excited about it. That's where I'm at. Like, that's how, and that's not to say, maybe when the day gets here, Julian, maybe like I'll get there and it'll be back in the park and it'll be good vibes and maybe they win the game. They will suck me in. They will reel me in because they do it every year. But I have never been this frustrated with the direction of the organization.
Can we please clip CJ having his little mini Hulk moment just now? Please. Please. March 28th is opening day, right?
I'm going to get kicked out of this hotel. My neighbors are going to be like, what is going on in that?
Well, last one for you, Siege. What is the best food item? This is for Bradley 13. What is the best food item to have at an NHL game? What was your favorite food to have at a game?
Ooh. Well, here's the thing. Like, a lot of stadiums now are like, they have elite food items, right? Like, a lot of stadiums have gone in on having celebrity chefs or whatever. Like, so I'm sure there's like way better answers to this. But for me, I always love going to a sporting event and getting a hot dog. I know it's like so lowbrow of me, but I kind of have a rule. Like, I don't ever, like, seriously, I've like never made a hot dog for myself at home. So like for me, like, cause I realize it's very nutritionally unsound, but when I go to like something like a sporting event or something where they have that, like a baseball game or even a hockey game, that's the kind of thing I enjoy having a hot dog. Like when you go to Montreal, it's just like, it's part of it. Right. So, that would be my best, but I know nowadays, like I'm not going around as a fan, but there's every arena now has got amazing food options. You get like sushi and stuff, and I'm a big sushi fan. So I know there's better foods than a hot dog, but I'm still kicking it old school and going hot dog if I go to a sporting event.
All right. You said Montreal in that answer. So that takes care of it for me. That's the best place you can get hot dogs around the
show.
Or Shanshou.
Shanshou.
You don't mean we don't even
Shanshou.
You can say Shanshou.
Shanshou. Shanshou.
When I was in high school, one of my favorite places to go for food was a place called Shanshou. It no longer exists.
Oh yeah,
but yeah.
Did you ever go to the Barbie Barn?
Maybe once, but like it's like it further west from where I lived, so like it wasn't like on the way for me. Like it was kind of out of the way for me to go. I think I went as like a kid, but yes, I am aware of the Barbie Barn in the West Island of Montreal closing up after all these years. It's just like this big yellow ass building. You just drive past if you were in that part of town and it's closing. Goodness. And it never had any windows.
I covered the previous President's Cup golf tournament when it was in Montreal. I'm going way back. Like I can't remember the year. It might have been 2007.
Yes.
Yeah. And I stayed in a random part of Montreal, like obviously not downtown that I don't know. And there was a Barbie Barn across the street. And I remember going there like three times that week with the other reporters because we didn't have a car. Like we were kind of stranded a little bit. Like we were it was good. It was maybe not good enough to go three times in a week. Like that might have been asking for a stomach related issue. But
Jesus.
but I like the Barbie Barn in Montreal and it's closed.
Yeah.
All good things come to an end, brother.
Oh man, let's pour one out for Barbie Bard. I see it all seriousness because there were a lot of people. I saw photos on Facebook of people pulling up to the Barbie Bard in its last days, just showing out for the owners there. Yeah, But this was another great one, another great show. Sunglasses, CJ. I'll let you get to the pool because clearly you are.
My Shady Rays, brother. I'm going to need these. I'm going to need both pairs this week.
All right. That's going to do it for our Monday edition of CJ Show. We'll be back on Thursday. Enjoy the pool, buddy. Enjoy the vacation.
I'm still going to be here.
I mean, yeah, but like, you know, you're.
We should take bets on how burnt I'll be by then.
Are you not a sunscreen person?
Well, I'm putting it on, but the one thing I've noticed is a lot of the folks with the same complexion as me at the place I'm staying are very red. Like a lot of people here have been getting caught off guard by that sun. So I'm going to do my best not to.
Please mix it a water.
Let's face it. Yeah, I'm not partying or anything. I'm just having a good time. But I got two colors, Julian, white and red. Like there's almost no in between for me. So I'm concerned that I might be pretty red by Thursday's show. So that's something to look out for, those that watch us on YouTube.
You have two colors, he said.
And I'm going to be rocking both pairs of the Shady Rays, brother.
Okay, at least. Good on you for doing that.
I need both.
Good on you for doing that. All right, we'll be back on Thursday. Hopefully, CJ does not look red like a tomato. I hope not. I hope not for your sake, brother. Anyways, thanks so much for listening, watching, however you consume the podcast. Peace.
The Chris Johnston Show. Inside the game, twice a week. Follow Chris on Twitter, @ReporterChris. And follow Julian McKenzie, @JKMcKenzie.